Welcome back to A Year of War and Peace, the podcast where we go from War and Peace Zero to War and Peace Hero in 1 year flat. I can't talk properly for some reason. What's going on, voice? We're up to book 14, chapter 15, which goes a little bit like this. The stores, the prisoners and the marshal's baggage train stopped at the village of Shamshevo. The men crowded together around the campfires. Pierre went up to the fire, ate some roast horse flesh, lay down with his back to the fire and immediately fell asleep. He again slept as he had done at Mosheysk after the Battle of Borodino. Again real events mingled with dreams, and again some more. Someone, he or someone else, gave expression to his thoughts, and even to the same thoughts that had been expressed in his dream at Mosheysk. Life is everything, life is good, everything changes and moves, and that movement is God. And while there is life, there is joy in consciousness of the divine. To love life is to love God. Harder and more blessed than all else is to love this life in one's sufferings, in innocent sufferings. Karatayev came to Pierre's mind. And suddenly he saw vividly before him a long-forgotten, kindly old man who had given him geography lessons in Switzerland. "Wait a bit," said the old man, and showed Pierre a globe. This globe was alive, a vibrating ball without fixed dimensions. Its whole surface consisted of drops closely pressed together, and all these drops moved and changed places, sometimes several of them merging into one, and sometimes one dividing into many. Each drop tried to spread out and occupy as much space as possible, but others, striving to do the same, compressed it, sometimes destroyed it, and sometimes merged with it. "That is life," said the old teacher. "How simple and clear it is," thought Pierre. "How is it I did not know this before? God is in the midst, and each drop tries to expand so as to reflect him to the greatest extent. And it grows, merges, disappears from the surface, sinks to the depths, and again emerges. There, now, Karatayev has spread out and disappeared. Do you understand, my child?" said the teacher. "Do you understand, damn you?" shouted a voice, and Pierre woke up. He lifted himself and sat up. A Frenchman who had just pushed a Russian soldier away was squatting by the fire, engaged in roasting a piece of meat stuck on a ramrod. His sleeves were rolled up, and his sinewy, hairy red hands, with their short fingers, deftly turned the ramrod. His brown, morose face, with frowning brows, was clearly visible by the glow of the charcoal. "It's all the same to him," he muttered, turning quickly to a soldier who stood behind him. "Brigand, get away." And twisting the ramrod, he looked gloomily at Pierre, who turned away and gazed into the darkness. A prisoner, the Russian soldier the Frenchman had pushed away, was sitting near the fire, patting something with his hand. Looking more closely, Pierre recognized the blue-gray dog sitting beside the soldier, wagging his tail. "Ah, he's come," said Pierre. "And he began, but did not finish. Suddenly and simultaneously, a crowd of memories awoke in his fancy, of the look Platon had given him as he sat under the tree, of the shot heard from that spot, of the dog's howl, of the guilty faces of the two Frenchmen as they ran past him, of the lowered and smoking gun, and of Karatayev's absence at this halt. And he was on the point of realizing that Karatayev had been killed. But, just at that instant, he knew not why. The recollection came to his mind of a summer evening he had spent with a beautiful Polish lady on the veranda of his house in Kiev. And without linking up the events of the day, or drawing a conclusion from them, Pierre closed his eyes, seeing a vision of the country in summertime, mingled with memories of bathing and of the liquid, vibrating globe, and he sank into water so that it closed over his head. Before sunrise, he was awakened by shouts and loud and rapid firing. French soldiers were running past him. "The Cossacks," one of them shouted, and a moment later a crowd of Russians surrounded Pierre. For a long time he could not understand what was happening to him. All around he heard his comrades sobbing with joy. "Brothers, dear fellows, darlings," old soldiers exclaimed, weeping, as they embraced Cossacks and hussars. The hussars and Cossacks crowded round the prisoners. One offered them clothes, another boots, and a third bread. Pierre sobbed as he sat among them and could not utter a word. He hugged the first soldier who approached him and kissed him, weeping. Dolokhov stood at the gate of the ruined house, letting a crowd of disarmed Frenchmen pass by. The French, excited by all that happened, were talking loudly amongst themselves, but as they passed Dolokhov, who gently switched his boots with his whip and watched them with cold, glassy eyes that boded no good, they became silent. On the opposite side stood Dolokhov's Cossack, counting the prisoners and marking off each 100 with a chalk line on the gate. "How many?" Dolokhov asked the Cossack. "The second 100," replied the Cossack. "Filez, filez," which means "get along, get along," Dolokhov kept saying, having adopted this expression from the French, and when his eyes met those of the prisoners, they flashed with a cruel light. Denisov, bareheaded and with a gloomy face, walked behind some Cossacks who were carrying the body of Petya Rostov to a hole that had been dug in the garden. All right, there we go, another chapter down. And the Cossacks, the Russians, have arrived to save Pierre. Pierre has been saved, although it was a bit like blink and you miss it. 1 minute he's asleep having this dream, and then the next minute there's a line about loud firing and Russians surrounding him, and hey presto, he's been rescued. Could have been a pretty awesome scene, really, a fight scene or exciting battle, but hey. I suppose it's not really an action book, is it? He was having one of his God is life moments that Tolstoy loves so much, the kind of God epiphanies that usually happen right before something quite significant happens in the book. And he was having all kinds of nice dreams and memories, and then he's been rescued. At the end we had Dolokhov and Denisov arriving and freeing the Russians. And one thing I was confused about is then they were talking about the prisoners. But I was thinking, well, are the French now the prisoners, or are they still referring to the Russians when they say the prisoners? I wasn't really sure. It was a bit confusing. I'll tell you one thing, though. They talked about eating horse flesh at the start, and that reminded me of something I did in Yokohama, I think it was in, yeah. Yokohama, in a izakaya in Japan. And, I mean, if you haven't guessed already, that thing that I did was eat horse flesh. And when I say horse flesh, I really mean horse flesh. It was raw horse flesh that I ate. I was on a date with a girl I was dating at the time, a Japanese girl. She was from Yokohama. And she said it was beef. She told me it was raw beef. And I said, well, do you just eat it raw? She said, yeah, you just eat it raw, but first you dip it into this raw egg. And she said, Tommy, it does something. Dipping it in the raw egg does something. So it was raw meat dipped in raw egg. And she took one and ate it. And she said, that's really delicious, you should try it. So I'm like, okay, raw beef, I suppose I'll eat it, and dipped in raw egg. I don't know, I think anywhere else in the world, any other country in the world, I would not have done that. I wouldn't have trusted it. But Japan has insanely good food safety, food quality standards. So I said, what the hell? And I dipped this piece of raw beef into this raw egg and I ate it. And then later she told me that, by the way, that wasn't beef. That was horse meat. That was raw horse meat. So yeah, I've eaten raw horse. which was, to be honest, I wouldn't probably eat it again because I wouldn't, I don't know, would you eat a horse? Horses are so cool. But it was delicious. So, you know, whatever. So, one question that springs to my mind is, why was Pierre so cozy in this chapter? He was clearly sleeping, you know, he was having a dream, so he was sleeping in his convoy, so they've stopped for the night or, you know, set up camp somewhere. But you'd think he'd be out in the elements or cold or miserable or, you know, exhausted. He's been, his feet are, you know, what did they say yesterday? His feet were mangled or something weird, word like that. He's not in a good way. But in this description, he seemed quite peaceful and, yeah, comfortable. It was a bit confusing, this chapter, for me. I have to have another read of it. The other thing I wanted to say is the great migration is happening. The migration to the new subreddit. reddit.com/r/thehemingwaylist. I think there's 9 of us there or something like that now. So it's growing, and hey, it's a beautiful place to be. All 9 of the people in the community are there for a purpose. We're there to talk literature. We're there to go through this list of Hemingway's recommended books. So, 9 is enough. 9 is a pretty big book club, really. But you're welcome to join us. Please join us. We'd love to have you there. reddit.com/r/thehemingwaylist. We're merging over to there. You can still be part of the A Year of War and Peace community too, by the way. You can join both subs. So, we'd love to see you join. That's going to do us for today. Thank you for listening. I'll see you tomorrow.